Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. If you've just joined us, we're going to be taking some of the questions that you have presented us during the week through email, and we're going to be doing our very best with Mr. Ed Rudell, our tech expert in studio here, to answer those questions for you and to open up a few other resources that will help you hopefully make your experience on your computer and on the Internet a whole lot more pleasurable. So stick around. We've got some answers for your questions coming up in this second hour of the Internet Advisor. Welcome to this hour number two of the Internet Advisor. I think from my point of view, the one that's the real goal for you folks who are users out there. Our objective over these, well, since 1998, has been to, in simplest terms possible, make the Internet accessible to you. So that people have, and in your computers as well, obviously, that when people have been having problems, to try to find out what those problems are and get them handled. And we've been joined by some great tech folks in here, people who've had their hands on machines, in machines, and have been helping to service them for a long time. And with me today is Mr. Ed Rudell.
Sometimes through machines when you punch them.
That's true. Otherwise, drop kick them to the goalposts of life. Ed's in here to help answer some of the questions that we've received this week. Now, normally, we would have folks who would be calling in right now if we were on our live broadcast on WJR, which is our flagship station out of Detroit. But on occasions, we're preempted by sports programming there. We still continue every week to do our program. That's because on a regular basis, people are sending us their questions via email. And they do that by going to internetadvisor.net, our homepage, and then clicking on the Contact Us button and sending us their concerns. And we do our very best to get back to them and answer those questions. And what we're going to do this week, Ed, is to dig into some of those questions right here on the air.
Excellent.
Now, before we do that, though, you ran across something that you think is going to be very, very important for people in particular who have moved into the world, and many of them are now, grudgingly. You got to heel tracks in the dust as they're moving that way. Moving into Windows 8.1.
Yes. And one of if you will call it, the problems with Microsoft Windows in the past is that its backup strategy was always based on its Microsoft server terminology or technology. And the backup wasn't the best in the world. I mean, what happens if your computer crashed and it was no longer bootable? You know, the backup media, how do you actually restore your media? Well, with Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, Microsoft has provided a number of backup utilities, but they changed all the names.
I love it, didn't you?
They changed all the names, they changed all the terminology, and people that, you know, you get to a certain point, we don't like change. I mean, Windows 8 was enough, but now you got, and it's no longer called backup, it's called history.
Oh, okay. Lord.
So thanks to the kudos to WindowsSecrets.com, Fred Langa. Fred has written this letter, and I subscribe to it, and it's a free subscription that I received. And
right.
And as you know, when I don't always drink beer, but when I do, I drink Dusakis, right? No, when I don't always read his newsletters, but what I do, I read Fred Langa,
yes.
You know, because I get him in there weekly.
Windows,
very good.
By the way, the newsletter is called Windows Secrets, and you can go to windowssecrets.com to find that. We'll have a link on our homepage. Matter of fact, we have a link to the whole backup strategy that's already on the homepage there, and that'll take you to the newsletter called Windows Secrets. It's called Windows Backup Tutorial by Fred Langa.
Yes.
That'll take you to the newsletter, and you can. It's really well worth it. For years, we've read these.
Yes, we've read these. We've had him on the air with us once or twice, and he's done a great job breaking down what Microsoft's thinking was and what backup strategies they've provided. Something called you still have the Windows system restore capabilities, but Windows 8 backup and restore is now underneath file history. Of course, Microsoft provides you and file history allows you the ability to back up to a external USB drive or a network drive if you're at home or at work. And why didn't they just call it Microsoft Backup? And that's what Fred gets into in his newsletter. Microsoft, of course, gives you free internet storage with OneDrive. Used to be known as Microsoft... oh my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. What did OneDrive used to be called?
Oh, Lord, I forgot. It's changed so often. SkyDrive,
SkyDrive. Yes. And because of litigation and lawsuits and name rights, they had to change it to OneDrive. So that provides you the ability to synchronize all your data to the cloud, if you will, with free storage that Microsoft provides. And if you're an Office 365 subscriber, you get additional storage practically unlimited backup strategy. And Fred goes into how to configure it so that it does real-time syncing and live copies and the ability to, access the information from the cloud only or synchronize it with data on your computer.
Oh, I like that, because I have found in the past sometimes with some of these cloud strategies, you got them in both places. So I thought I was freeing up space in my hard drive.
Yes.
Because I got the whole file here and the whole file there, which I don't necessarily want.
Right. And the other third thing that Fred actually thinks of as or calls backup strategy, but what Microsoft calls it is refresh or reset. And and that is the ability of within Windows 8.1, when you say it crashes or whatever, Microsoft's provided the ability to restore to factory defaults. You're no longer reliant on the manufacturer to do this for you. It's integrated in the operating system itself. Mm-hmm. You have the ability to do a refresh, which is restore Windows operating system to a functional state. You won't lose your data. You'll probably lose any programs that you've added and any customizations, but you'll be functional, which is great.
And at least most of your files there when you do the
refresh.
Now, the reset, however,
that's like that wipes everything and puts it back to out-of-the-box experience.
But the nice thing about that, as you said, is you can do that right from a screen on your computer.
Correct.
When you get into a mess, you can get to that screen, and he goes in to show you how to do that.
Exactly. And he did a great job breaking it down. So kudos to him, because even I was confused on it. When my son, when it started college a couple years ago, he had the first Windows 8 system. I'm supposed to be up in this technology. I was still rebelling against it, like many of our listeners were. And I'm like,
yes.
Why would Microsoft change its name?
Here's the important thing, folks. For those of you who have Windows 8.1, and by the way, coming up on January 21st, or maybe it's already past that for those of you who are listening to this, Microsoft announced Windows 10. And that's the next stage, but it will still benefit from many of these things. So go to internetadvisor.net and take a look at that link that we posted there about Windows Backup Tutorial by Fred Langa. Listen, we've had something happen here on the show that hasn't happened in a long time. I don't think it's the first time, but Annie Nichols is actually behind the wheel. She's our engineer who stepped in. Thank you. She's helping us with this program. Eric Dorsch, thank you so much for also handling the phones back there. I want to acknowledge the people behind the glass, because if they ever stop doing their job, there will be the sounds of silence here. I'm Foster Brown. Ed Rudell in studio with me. We're handling the questions that you folks send us throughout the week and past few weeks. And this is a big part of our what we do here is answer people's questions. How we started was answering people's questions back in 1998, Gary and I, on my then morning program on WJR in Detroit. Now we're part of this network and a podcast as well. So, Eddie, I got something here that I haven't had in a long, long time.
A free meal?
That too. This is a letter.
A typed
physical
letter?
Physical typed letter. It wasn't handwritten. It was typed, at least, from a gentleman in Toledo, Ohio, Bill. And Bill, we're very thankful. I don't know if you'll ever hear this, but we'll also get some answers back to you by snail mail as well, so that you're helped. But he sent us a letter, and in it he has this question. When I go online, at the bottom of the page on the screen, it says, Internet Explorer blocked this website from displaying content with security certificate errors. Then it says, a problem with this webpage caused the Internet Explorer to close and reopen the tab. That's the first problem. Then he said there's another one. Internet Explorer has stopped working. A problem caused the program to stop working correctly. Windows will close the program and notify you if a solution is available. Windows never tells me of any solution for the problem, which is one of the most annoying things about
it. It is.
And he says, do you have any ideas to help fix this problem?
Yes. Okay. I have five off the top of my head.
Okay.
So one of the things that I always like to do is I always like going into my, well, we're assuming that he's running, because he said that he purchased the computer at 12/12/12. So we're assuming he's running Windows 7, possibly Windows Vista, hopefully not Windows XP. And I always go in and customize my desktop, and you know, you right mouse click on it and you go to the backgrounds, and I always select the ability to have an Internet Explorer icon on the desktop, as right. opposed to me dragging and dropping and creating my own shortcut there.
Ah.
And one of the reasons for that is if you do that, you can right mouse click on that icon and select the ability to start Internet Explorer with no add-ons.
I did not know that.
Right. And I believe you can do it in XP, but I'm not. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I was working on one this morning. So okay. you can, with Internet Explorer 8 or 9, you had that ability. But you can't do it with shortcuts.
Okay, good. So the idea is you have to go into properties, isn't it? On the display. Go to the display.
Yeah, yes. Or you can actually right mouse click on the start
okay.
button. And if you have an Internet Explorer icon there, yeah. or start programs Internet Explorer. Right.
But you want to make sure you're using the icon that's part of the operating system, not just a copy
exactly.
you're putting on the homepage.
And so okay. you right mouse click on it and select start Internet Explorer with no add-ons. Because more than likely what's happened is his Internet Explorer has either been hijacked the homepage yep. or an add-on program has been added to it. So when every time he launches Internet Explorer, an add-on piece of software is trying to direct him to maybe a bogus search site or a fraudulent or what's the term I'm looking for? No. Hostile.
Yeah, yeah.
Hostile right. website. And Internet Explorer ain't having nothing to do with that. It recognizes that the certificate is bad.
Okay.
And it stops it. That's the first.
Yeah, that security certificate is the kind of thing that is the hint that something's going wrong. Internet Explorer recognizes they don't match.
Correct. Boom. And it's stopping it. And then the program doesn't like it, this add-on program, so it's basically trying and basically crashes Internet Explorer.
I got you.
Okay, so that's probably what's happening. So you can launch Internet Explorer with no add-ons, and then you can, when you do that, Internet Explorer will probably function. You'll probably still receive the original error message that you are going to maybe if your homepage has been hijacked, you know, you may still get a certificate error. But go in there, and there's so many different variables. First, you want to download and install Malwarebytes from malwarebytes.org and let it scan. Download and install it. Scan your computer. It'll probably discover these fraudulent add-ons that attach.
And you can
themselves.
Find the links, by the way, to malwarebytes.org in our toolbox, which cool. you'll find our toolkit,
correct.
Which is on our homepage.
If you want to go even further, you can go within Internet Explorer and disable the add-ons. So
yes.
select Tools, Add-on Manager, and then you can deselect all your add-ons or.
Am I right that in later versions of Internet Explorer, and this has been some of the problem in some ways, they stopped allowing add-ons? You can't have extensions, am I right, in like Internet Explorer 11, I think it is?
Not that I'm aware of. I mean, that's what a toolbar is.
Oh, okay.
Is an add-on okay. program.
Okay, but they're not extensions. Like no. you can have with Google and with Safari and some of the other ones.
That's true.
Now,
the other thing is you also, and this is probably where you're going, you always want to have an alternate browser.
That's it, I was going to say.
Go ahead.
One of the things we always say when you start, if you're limited to one browser, you can be hobbled. You can not be able to get to the internet because of a problem that may only be in that one browser. And it's also a great way to troubleshoot what's going on with the browser by having one or two other ones. I have, I think, maybe four on my computer. I don't use them all, but I have them there as backup. So I will have, for instance, right now I have on my Mac, I have Chrome and I have Safari.
Yep.
And I have the ability to get to Opera as well if I wanted to. But between Chrome and Safari, and I also have Firefox. So I have the three of them on there.
Correct.
If you're running Internet Explorer, just put one other one on there, like Chrome. Or if you want, Firefox.
Sure, Mozilla Firefox.
Yeah. And there's even a Safari out there that will work within the Windows environment. But the key thing is, when you have another browser, you can open that up and see if the same thing begins to happen. If it doesn't, bingo. You immediately identified the problem.
Correct. And that something has been damaged or corrupted with that, with your current browser. Now, another thing that I always like, that you can always do, especially with Internet Explorer, if you're unable to fix it with Malwarebytes and you're unable to right mouse click on the desktop icon and select run with no add-ons, is you can always go into the control panel and programs and features, and then you'll see that Windows Internet Explorer has been updated. You can uninstall. You'll see Internet Explorer there. You're probably running Internet Explorer 11 or 10. You can uninstall the current version. You just uninstall it. Don't worry. If you're running Internet, if you're running Windows 7, you probably have five different versions of Internet Explorer that have been installed on there.
Now, how
do you could subsequently go in there and say uninstall Internet Explorer? It'll uninstall Internet Explorer 11. You're back to 10.
I got you.
You should be able to launch it.
Now, Ed, do you have to go into? I know on the left-hand side of the control panel, there's a I think a thing you click on there that says to get to.
Windows
Elements.
Windows
program.
Or view installed updates or I think that's what
he's
it
digging
is.
For. It's Windows Program Elements. I think it is. That's where you'll then see the Internet Explorer in there, and I think you uninstall it from that point.
Yeah, you can either uninstall a program or uninstall an installed update. This is for Windows 7.
Right.
And you may find if you don't see it in the programs list, you may see it in the updates list.
Ah, okay. But I was thinking of, I think there's a reading there on the left-hand side of control panel that allows you to also get at some of the Windows program elements, like Internet Explorer, and you can uninstall it, reboot the machine, and then, if I'm not wrong, it simply reinstalls.
Nope. It doesn't reinstall it, actually. During your next Windows update cycle, when it's scanning for security updates, it'll download another the newest version, but you'll be running the previous versions of Internet Explorer. I've done this on a computer and actually uninstalled three or four subsequent updates of Internet Explorer, like I said, going from 11, 10, 9, and back to 8, and then back to 7 eventually.
Which was the one that worked best? Wasn't it? Was it 8 that worked best or 9 that worked best with Windows 7? I'm trying to think back to that.
Okay,
we're drawing a blank on it.
Yeah.
But there were some that were optimized for Windows 7 in particular. Going on from there, heaven help us, it seems to be they keep on updating them. By the way, there's a new thing happening. We're going to hear about it next week. A brand new browser developed by Microsoft called Spartan.
What?
Spartan, I believe. We're going to find out more about that this next week. We're going to have some folks in from Microsoft. Back in just a moment to handle some more of the questions that have come in to us here on the Internet Advisor. I like this format, Ed. It's kind of fun sitting around here talking about computers with Mr. Ed Rudell.
It's just a one-on-one, you and me.
I love it. You and I and the questions. In case you've just kind of joined us here, what we're doing is talking about questions that people have sent in to us. And trying to get some help for them. We did stumble, as we were coming out of the last segment, stumbled on something that is going to be made official on January 21st. If you happen to be listening before then, after then, we're going to have a whole bunch of people from Microsoft in our studios on January 21st. And we're going to be talking with them at that time about all the things that will be revealed on January 21st.
Oh, yeah, I have to tell them what's going to be. That's my birthday, so they have to give me presents.
Oh, yes, I will tell them to bring, browsers. I mean, Surface Pro 3s and things like that. Just throw them at you.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I love that.
Throw them at my feet, please.
And on the 21st, they're going to be announcing Windows 10 preview now for the general consuming public.
Excellent.
I've been working with it for about 4 months. I love it. It works really wonderfully. I love the start page on the thing, and there have been some screenshots of that, where you don't come into that big, Cal would call the Fisher-Price look, where you've got these colorful squares.
You have a modified start menu that includes the left-hand column is the traditional, but then it does have the larger Fisher-Price tiles on there.
Yeah, which are nice, because you can only put the ones that you want in there.
Exactly.
And there's mail and whatever else it may be that you use on a regular basis. Anyway,
so
one of the things that was just revealed this last week was by Mary Jo Foley, who was a person who was kind of an insider and a commentator on Windows and Microsoft in general, is that there's a brand new browser coming to Windows 10.
Microsoft's coming out with a new browser.
A new browser. So Internet Explorer will not be the first thing you get there.
You know, this makes perfect sense. And they have to do this. The Internet Explorer that they provided with Windows 8 was terrible with the address bar at the bottom. And this may be that way.
Crazy.
It was crazy. But think of all the history that Internet Explorer has. Think of all the libraries of data that hackers have on all the holes that have been discovered over all the years. If Microsoft just says, poof, we're going to get rid of it. We're starting a new browser. They throw out those libraries. They start again.
And that's a beauty.
And it won't be as large of a target. I like it.
Among other things. But here's the cool thing. All right, all of you MSU fans out there, the new name is Spartan.
Really?
That is the new name that has been leaked. That's the code name that's been used in the development.
Spartan as in sparse or spare?
Well, it's supposed to look a lot like Chrome. The Chrome browser is, compared to the other ones, a pretty Spartan or sparse-looking space. Mm-hmm. Not all the bells and whistles that have come along with a lot of browsers. And this one is called Spartan. We'll see what it is.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that it's going to be the default browser that's there. However, apparently you can also go back and get the Windows 11, I believe it is.
I hope they choose a different color other than blue to represent the icon. Really?
Yeah.
Blue screen of death, Internet Explorer's the blue icon. Get rid of the blue, guys.
Paisley, anything.
Yeah.
But folks, we'll have more to say about that on our January 21st program when we have some folks in from Microsoft. We'll be talking about that and a whole lot more coming up. Okay. One of our next emails came from an old friend of ours, Cindy Lobb, out in Westland. And here was her message. She said, I had the hubby's laptop on today, and suddenly the screen went dark. I thought it was sleeping, like hubby, who's on the couch.
Yeah.
I don't know. I added that. It wasn't in there. Okay, but it but it wouldn't wake up. So I hit the power button, and it came up with the Dell sign. And then it said it was scanning the C drive, and stuck at 48%. So I hit the power button again. Now it says, no boot device found. Da-da-da-da. Press any key to reboot the machine. I hit any key. It tries to reboot, and I get the same message. Powered off again, took out the battery, turned it on. Now it says, repairing disk errors. This may take over an hour to complete. And that was 50 minutes ago. And the wheel of death is still spinning.
Well, if it's going to take an hour or more to fix, and it was only 50 minutes ago, she still has 10 minutes. No. So this is the classic symptom of a hard drive that is either failing, right? So you got a failing hard drive where you're actually getting disk errors, or what you're getting is corrupted Windows files, which is different. It's NTFS file system errors. So you can have corrupted files on your computer, or you can have damaged disk drive. They're kind of hard to discern which is which.
So one is the mechanical drive itself is failing.
Yes, and the other one is that for some reason maybe the head skipped on something or a file became corrupt because, you know, who knows?
Computer got bumped.
Bumped. Yep.
Yeah. And a little needles.
But even that is like a disk corruption too.
Yes. Yes.
But you should let the disk scan complete. If it doesn't. What are you going to need? You're going to need another hard drive. You're going to have to get a new computer.
News is those things are cheap.
Yeah, but how they get the data off here, and that's where we talk about that Heron's Boot CD or bootable flash drive. So if you go to the InternetExplorer.net website, and in the toolkit, we have a section in there called Live CDs.
InternetAdvisor.net.
What did I say?
Explorer.
InternetAdvisor.net.
I don't know where you get if you go to Internet Explorer.
I was thinking three steps ahead. And you can create a live or bootable CD.
Yeah.
So you're booting off of the CD or the flash drive instead of booting off of your hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll allow you to then navigate and get to your data.
Can I ask you to stop for a second? Because you've mentioned this a number of times. When you say you're booting off of something, let's just take one step back. What does that mean?
So every time you power up your computer, your computer is loading from a physical disk drive.
The
hard drive on your computer.
Right.
And it loads everything from the hard drive into the memory of the computer.
Right.
Most computers nowadays are shipping with 4 or 8 or more gigabyte of silicon memory or memory, right? And your hard drives are coming with 500 gigabyte or a terabyte of disk drive space or hard drive space,
right?
So it's loading it from the hard drive to the memory.
Okay.
And that's where the operating system loads. You know, one's long-term storage, the other one's short-term storage.
Now, when you have a bootable device then, like you plug a USB that's bootable.
Or a CD-ROM that's bootable.
Or put a CD-ROM in that's bootable. What's that doing?
Well, if your computer is configured properly, and it usually is from the manufacturer, it's usually configured to always boot from the DVD and CD drive first, then it checks for your USB drives, and then it'll check your hard drive.
Right.
So if you have a bootable media in there, you have the ability to, it'll ask you, do you wish to boot off of this media?
So quite simply, folks, when you hear him talking about bootable, and I just wanted to take a moment, that means that you start the computer from that USB drive when the main hard drive is damaged.
Right. And most manufacturers give you the ability, except now that we're running Windows 8, none of them do this by default. But if you're running Windows 7 and Vista and all previous operating systems, most manufacturers let you tap the, you know, the escape key to boot from, if you're running gateways, it's the escape key to, and that'll give you the ability to boot to a different source other than the hard drive. Mm-hmm. If you're running Dells, it's F2.
Is F2, okay.
Or F12.
12, I thought.
If you're running HPs, it's F9. You know, so okay. Most of the manufacturers gave you the ability to choose what you want to boot from, your original hard drive or something else.
Okay.
And what this allows you to do is boot to an operating system that's on this media so that you can navigate and see if your hard drive's there. And then maybe I can copy it off of to
right.
an external hard drive.
Right. This is kind of like a salvage operation.
It's
at
a
this
salvage.
Point.
Oh, good phrase.
Yeah. Because what you want to do then is to get your most important files, if you haven't been backing up.
Yep.
To get them off safely. Now, ta-da! If you've been backing up all along, you don't have to worry about
it. Right, it's time to get a new computer or take that one into the shop.
Exactly.
$50-$100, you get a new hard drive plus labor. You'll be out of there.
Hard drives are so cheap nowadays. You know, man.
Yeah.
500 gig hard drives are running for $50-$75.
All of these people a lot of listeners that are still running Windows XP, you have to realize your computers are approaching 8 years old, if not more. And those hard drives, you know, are only limited to spin for like 5 to 7 years.
And while you may have thought, well, it's still working for me, bless God. The hard drive has been doing a lot of work for you, a lot of spinning, et cetera, and it's a mechanical device, and it will wear out eventually. And right now, it is just the price of hard drives is ridiculously cheap. But in addition to that, if you have the money, it's also time to step up to a new machine.
Yep, and they're becoming so much, and it's maybe a laptop.
Yep.
Instead of getting a desktop, I have people that refuse to get anything other than a desktop because they had these monitors, but they're still the square flat screen monitors. You can go with a large landscape, you know, or widescreen version of those. Heck, even now, I had a person that's finally bought, he says, well, they made a compromise. So instead of buying a laptop, what they decided to do is they bought themselves another desktop, but it supported HDMI. And now they're using their old 32-inch TV that they don't really use anymore because they upgraded to a 60-inch. So they have a 32-inch
monitor
TV connected up to their computer, and that's their primary device.
That is great. I what I use is a laptop, but then I hook it up to a 22-inch monitor in front of me. And that's where I do most of my work. Mm-hmm. And then I have the laptop off to the side, which has some of the other programs on it. So lots of ways of getting around that issue. Okay, Cindy, hope we helped you with that. And we'll be back to tackle some more things. For instance, about DoubleClick, a nasty little virus that's out there, and some other things that people needed help with. Well, proving she's not just another pretty face, Annie Nichols has done a great job engineering our program.
Did she just throw something at the screen, you know, at the glass? I think she did.
One finger, two? No, okay. And Eric Dorsch has also been helping us with screening the calls. Thank you so much for helping us behind the scenes. I'm Foster Brown. Ed Rudell is our tech expert in studio here. We've had kind of our own Spartan version of the program here. Hope you've enjoyed it. By the way, show notes are at internetadvisor.net, but heck, you got here through the podcast, so you know they're there, and you've been able to find the other resources that we put up there as well. Coming up on January 21st, very special show. We're going to be doing one entirely dedicated to Microsoft and some of the big changes. And as we said before, the rumor is, and it's becoming more and more firm, that the new Windows 10 will be loading with a brand new, completely from the ground up, brand new browser called Spartan. So all of the Michigan State fans out there be happy with that.
Well, that's the code name. So
that's the code name that they have out there.
Any dibs on what they're going to really call it?
That'll be interesting. A formal brand name has yet to be announced. Microsoft is potentially considering discarding Internet Explorer completely. So what's going to happen is Windows 10 comes out. It'll have this brand new stripped down, very much looks like Chrome or Firefox in the sense of that very clean look. And then there'll be a backwards compatible version of Internet Explorer 11 there for those who want that.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a feeling people are going to really dig this. I hope it works that way. But one thing I didn't know is that Internet Explorer turns 20 this August.
That makes sense because it came out with Windows 95.
Yep.
And the Internet Explorer, and I forgot what the version
was. You remember the stink that came out when it came out?
Yes.
Because it was shipped with the operating system, and it was, we've got no other alternatives.
We all wanted to use Netscape.
That's right.
We had Netscape with Windows 3.1.
And it was a big battle that went on, a monopoly battle, et cetera. Anyway, it's kind of interesting that 20 years later, they're going to be launching this brand new browser, and it'll be very interesting to see what goes on with it. As you said very wisely before, it'll be also unloading all of the baggage that was there for hackers to pick into.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clean interface and be very interesting to see.
Take bets on they're going to call it Windows Phoenix. Ooh. Rebirth from the ashes. Right?
Oh, all right. We got bets down, folks.
Okay.
Okay, here's another question that came in from Dorothy. I'm getting a lot of emails in one of my mailboxes that says, it's from me. When I right-click on the show full headers, it said, it's from my email address. The emails are selling all sorts of things. How do I stop them? I tried to block my own email address, but it would not let me do that. But it will let me block in the filter box. Will that stop just the emails from me, like these bogus ones, or will it block all of my emails?
Well, I don't think that's the way to do it. There's four things that you should do. First is change your password. Change your internet or your email password, which is usually tied to your, it may be your internet service provider. So if you have Comcast, work with Comcast on changing your password or go to their home site and go through the user preferences and find out how to change your password. If you're using Yahoo or Google or MicrosoftOutlook.com, mm-hmm. they also provide the ability for you to change your password.
Right.
That's the first step.
Right. Somebody has obviously hijacked, maybe not your address list, but somebody else's address
list. Well, she could have
your name on her.
Yes, yes. And the other thing is that scan your computer with antivirus software and malware, anti-malware software like Malwarebytes from malwarebytes.org. Can you think of anything else, Foster, besides?
No, the changing your email password right away is the first one. You know, and don't panic. I think that. Probably it's simple, but it's a basic one. And then make sure that fixes the problem for you.
And if that doesn't work, you're going to have to contact your internet service provider.
She's with AT&T.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think she probably can go in there and reset the
password. And I'm surprised. And if she's using AT&T's email, which is Yahoo, I'm surprised they haven't contacted her and said that her mailbox is spewing out tons of spam.
Mm.
You know, remember my box in Internet Advisor was taken over.
That's right.
For a short period of time. And I was contacted right away
mm-hmm.
by our ISP.
Yeah.
And first thing they said, change your password, and the problem stopped.
Boom. All right. Let's move on to another one then. This one comes from Kevin, and he's a Gmail client, and he says, I have a Gateway laptop with Windows 7 and an Intel Core i3. Nice little laptop. Came with Realtek HD audio. And even though I have maxed up the volume controls and the equalizer settings, most videos I watch don't have enough volume to hear unless the room is dead silent. I usually have to raise each video's individual settings as well. I've had this problem from the beginning. I've updated the Realtek driver using Driver Booster 2, but it was no help. Please advise.
Well, it sounds like he was trying to do what my first suggestion would have been, which is this has been an ongoing issue from Microsoft since Windows 95, and that is there is no master volume control. There is a volume control that Microsoft calls the master volume control, but you have to remember if you're watching YouTube videos or watching web-based videos, each one of those have their own individual volume control.
Even on my Mac, I've noticed that.
Yes, and independent of the Microsoft volume control. If Microsoft was wise, they would have tied them all together or forced the software companies to comply, like Java-based mm-hmm. video browsers and ActiveX video browsers. So you have to go into every website that you could think of that you would watch video, and even check all the programs on your computer. Like Microsoft has, you know, QuickTime. Maybe you haven't seen a QuickTime movie in a long time. Do you remember the last time QuickTime players have actually launched on your computer?
No. Well, on a Mac. PC? So it they
probably does on a Mac.
A little more on a Mac.
On a
yeah.
PC, not that frequently.
No, not freaking at all.
So, and you'll find that the QuickTime has its own volume controls as well. So you have to launch every application, even the sound recorder, QuickTime.
Right. All independently controlled.
Microsoft Silverlight also is Microsoft's attempt at ActiveX or right. Flash version of video audio video controls. You have to launch every application and max them out.
Basically. And what would you think of in a situation like this? Maybe for troubleshooting at least, but maybe as a solution. He took the Realtek solution. Well, which probably came with the computer. And you're shaking your head like,
yeah, it's not going to work.
Now, how about this? Downloading VLC as a player, the free audio-video player,
possibly.
And using that to play?
It depends what he's watching. Would VLC launch if you're watching YouTube on a web?
That's a good question.
Yeah. See, the other thing that, so I gave him my primary suggestion we just talked about. The other thing that you could try is Microsoft Fix It. Microsoft has a website that has all their Microsoft Fix It apps there. This was first started where Microsoft would identify very common problems, numerous people reporting the problems, and they'd provide a Fix It app to fix the problem. Instead of giving the users the instructions, say, go open up the registry editor, or open up this location and make this fix.
Guy with the blue hat and everything else.
So Microsoft has provided a page for Microsoft Fix It that should take care of it. And if you search through the Fix It thing, they actually have a volume control fix for audio playbacks.
Nice.
So Microsoft. So anyways, that was the other suggestion. I sent him the link, and you could just search for Microsoft Fix It, and you'll be taken to that page.
So in general, when people are having problems with a Windows-based machine, one of the things they can do to look for some common solutions would be to go to the support.microsoft.com.
Correct.
And then in the search box there, put in whatever the thing happens to be that they're having trouble with and see if there's a fix-it that can help them.
Exactly.
And the wonderful thing about that, folks, is that you just click on that, download it to your computer, and it goes to work.
Yes.
Behind the scenes, takes care of it, make sure you're done, and then says goodbye.
Exactly.
I love it. Well, I hope you've loved this show, enjoyed it. We'll be back with our live program on January 21st. And as they say, God willing, and the crick don't rise. For Eddie Riddell and myself, Foster Brown, we've had a wonderful week here and look forward to this coming one. A big one for Microsoft as they are going to be launching a whole lot of stuff, including that brand new browser called Spartan for all of you Michigan State fans. Be happy for maybe be green and white instead of blue. Thank you to all the engineers who have made the program possible. I see Rich has stepped back in to wrap things up. Rich Lozinski, thank you. And for the rest of you, don't forget, go to internetadvisor.net for our show notes and for continuing information, and send us your problems there.